the blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies or practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day! Oh, happy blessed place! Oh, happy blessed time! Oh, happy blessed path! Oh, happy blessed opportunity! In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiampi tatiampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering. So a reminder that every Sunday morning we record these groups and make them available to monthly donors. And if you're new to practice and you'd like, you may take a back jack from the supply in the corner over there and sit on that during the group. So what shall we look at this morning? Scott.
A couple weeks ago we were talking, I think in the Sunday morning group, about or a couple people were talking about unconsciousness and love.
Unconsciousness and love.
And somebody else made this statement about getting serious about love. Mm-hmm. That really has stuck with me since then. Mm-hmm. And I think the serious was pointed at like the importance of choosing love and the wholehearted spirit of committing ourselves to that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that real importance of choosing love, that wholehearted commitment to that choice to for love.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that's being pointed out is how important that is to the whole, to everyone, for this being to choose that. Mm-hmm.
So not that it's just important for this particular person called Scott, mm-hmm. but it's important for everything.
Yeah, yeah. I guess the image that comes up that we use sometimes is if we are all cells in Buddha, mm-hmm. or all cells in the body of Christ, or however you want to look at it, that when I'm participating in a consciousness in the particular content, self-hate, mm-hmm. Then I'm not only not assisting the body, I'm now drawing energy mm-hmm. Away mm-hmm. from the rest of the whole.
Yeah, it's so easy to fall into that belief when we're feeling like, and when we're focused on being a separate person,
yeah.
That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that I don't choose love. It doesn't matter that I'm in this self-hate.
Yes.
When indeed, you know that it has an effect on the whole.
Yeah. Yeah. And that helps me because I was in some pretty good self-hate last night. And the content, it's important to kind of say, just to expose it, because, mm-hmm. yeah, is the thinning and the loss of my hair. And it's not a new story. It's been ongoing, but of course, hair loss doesn't get better. It gets thinner and more hair falls out. And the duality that self-hate gets me in when that comes up is, it's basically some sort of level of unacceptableness, you're ugly, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. And then the other side of it is, well, geez, it's just hair. What's the big deal?
Yeah, so it flips back and forth between telling you, well, without hair, you're going to be like really ugly, and it's yeah. a big deal. And then the other side, it gets you with, what's the matter with you? Why are you concerned about
yeah.
this?
So, that just leaves a person paralyzed. Like, the image that comes up is like the person's just been sort of thrown out into like outside into the snow, and they're just cold. There's nothing they can do. So, I was watching that last night, and then I could watch that pull to go into the conditioned behavior, into the karmic behavior, like, it's funny living at a monastery because there's you just can't do those things like, I'm just going to go watch a movie, or I'm going to go eat a bunch of food, or, you know, the thing that arose was like, I'm just going to go to sleep, you know, like, I'm going to pull the covers over my head. And then it was like, wait, I live at a monastery, like, that, this is it, this is why I'm here.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was just so obvious that I'm not, again, going to reinforce this, because it's a process,
yeah.
You know, because you know, everyone can, I'm sure, put whatever, something about their body, or a facial feature, or something that they don't like into into this example.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this process of hatred is, no. It can't be the answer to continue this again.
Mm-hmm. So just really, it's like at the end of the line.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. I can see that the pull is to choose distraction. They're limited here, but there is still. I could still go for that. I could still go for the going to sleep. But you know, someone else said no.
Yeah.
This is why I'm here. I'm here to practice. I'm here to look at this stuff, and I'm going to look at it.
And I'm here to choose love.
And I'm here to choose.
And this
love.
Is not what I'm in right at that moment. Is not love. So we have this really great tool called the recorder, and all you really have to do is just have enough willingness to hit record. And so I did. And, you know, he just got to tell the story. And he got to be all upset about it, and frustrated, and hit his fist, and, you know, basically just act out all this stuff that he has been feeling. And, you know, a lot of just, I don't want to. I don't like this. You know, it's not fair. You know, hair loss is supposed to be like receding hairline, and but it stays thick on the side. But your hair, you know, is actually getting bare on the side. You know, it's just like, it's not even the right kind of hair loss. You know? There really is something wrong with you.
So really giving that guy a chance to have all of his feelings, and which would not have happened with the distraction.
Yeah.
You know, it seemed like, somehow it seems like the distraction's taken care of all of it. Somehow by just stuffing it down.
Yes.
And doing something that's ultimately destructive.
Yeah.
And to, you know, to just really give that guy his chance to just let go and say, what's so?
That's a good point you just said about it. Somehow seems like it's taking care of it, about to stuff it down when we're feeling bad. But if we really examine that, how is that taking care of anything?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's so interesting how such a pull to that, and then you can see that that pull to stuffing it down or distracting, that whoever's identified, that identification doesn't want this to end. You know, that identification wants to suffer.
Yeah, that guy doesn't even really want hair. He just wants to. Yeah. He wants to be in the story all the time of.
Yes.
Oh God, it's so awful.
Yeah, and it's a really good point, because if all of a sudden, poof, you know, I had thick hair again, they used to really love my hair. It would just find another content to put into the suffering selfie system.
Yeah, wow, that's excellent, yeah.
So then there was all of that, and then kind of what happened in here, there was just laughter, because it just sounds a little bit silly, you know, the dramatics of it kind of come up, but just to also acknowledge, it is a loss of an identity.
Yeah.
You know, I've had hair since, you know, about 6 months, I think I had hair, and, you know, so for the next, you know, almost 40 years, I had hair, so. So, you know, there's just a loss and there's a grieving, and that's okay too. And so, but what came up is then I let him tell a story, and then I turned to the mentor, and the mentor was just that, you know, like allowing him to feel how he feels, and just total just acceptance of him, and just love no matter what kind of stuff. And, you know, it's just so clear, like, that's what I'm here to do in this world. To choose unconditional love.
Yeah.
No matter what's going on in my life, it really doesn't matter. And you can see that once you start to choose that unconditional love. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the whole deal.
That's the whole deal.
I remember, and I know I can't quote her on this, but I do remember it really impacted me in hearing Sherry say, you know, that may be the whole reason we're here.
Yeah.
Is to just embrace and compassion. Yeah. This being in this lifetime,
Yeah, and it's fun because, you know, you can do that with nice and you know, all these other qualities that are easy, but then it starts to come down to things, yeah, but not that, you know? And it's like, especially that, you know? And then it was kind of funny, because I'm working with the What Universe Are You Creating? Book from Sherry and Ashwini. And in the beginning, there's, you know, there's these illustrations of monks, and the illustrations, they're all bald. And so, you know, I'm reading through it, and there's one bowing, and the mentor's like, see, you totally fit in.
You gotta love that mentor.
Just a little humor, and that point, because so much of my issue as a two on the Enneagram, the kind of that personality system, is about belonging.
Yeah.
You know, that you, so of course this is something about not belonging.
Yeah.
So it's just such a perfect comment.
Wow, really. And maybe the hair was leading the way to where the belonging really was, you know.
Exactly. So anyway, just really, and you know, I think again, when we're looking at self-hate, another really important component is what I'm attempting to do now is put it out, not on the recorder is really important, and if you know you're part of a group or tell a friend or something to get it out of you and self-hate or ego having a conversation about it.
Yeah.
Because it really, every time you expose it out of that really small, tight system and you bring it out into, you know, in the open, and this room is a nice kind of metaphor, just the light's coming in, there's all these lovely people, it just can't survive.
Yeah.
It just doesn't, it can't maintain itself.
Yeah. As you say, I mean, just the love behind that and the sweetness of it versus that, I don't know the word. It's just the festering that comes, you know, keeping all of that stuff in the darkness, and it comes out then in unskillful ways, unpleasant ways, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But to just really just bring it here and group, bring it, you know, to the recorder, bring it to the mentor, and just like, whoa.
Yeah, because you know that it's going to change. You don't know how it's going to work, but you know that it's going to be something different.
Yeah.
And I imagine that's why everyone is in this room or listening to this recording, is that they're done doing what they've been doing forever.
Yeah.
You know, and they want to try something different. Mm-hmm. And we actually have a process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this practice offers a process to do something different. And the last thing I wanted to say is, as I'm talking, I can feel that momentum and that energy, and it's like, what else that's unacceptable can I bring into love, unconditional love, you know?
Which is,
get serious about this and do it.
And that's the attitude, that's the spirit, you know, to just that state of inquiry. What else is there?
Yeah.
What else can I bring into this love?
And there's just so much support. It's like, how can the answer not be just, yes, let's do it.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And just know there's going to be a, no, I don't want to, and all that stuff, all that ego stuff, and just be like, okay.
Yeah.
And do it anyway.
Yeah. Wow. And right there, as you speak, is there's a demonstration of choosing life over ego.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a being that says, oh, that's it. I'm going with the winning team.
Yes.
You know, I choose life and I just bring it on. I want to look at it all.
Yeah.
And as you started this morning, what a contribution to the whole.
Mm-hmm.
And as each of us says, yeah, I choose life, bring it on, I want to look at it all, that opens the door, it feels like, for each of us to do the same thing. Yeah.
Thank you.
Lakota.
Just loving that conversation, and so thankful for Sangha.
Uh-huh.
It's so helpful to hear, you know, the processes that happen in here, out there, kind of thing.
And
you can see it in mirrored, and gosh, and seeing how... you know, seeing self-hate at work in, quote, other people out there, you know, like Sangha members here, and then also friends and family out in the world, it's just so obvious what it is, you know, what it's doing. Like, I shortly before I came here, I was having a conversation with a friend who was just talking about this, this horribly painful self-hate, you know, and all these kind of self-hating comments were coming out. And I was just sitting there having this experience of, like, how can you not see that you are a perfectly wonderful human being, you know?
Mm-hmm. So just seeing that self-hate and the gift of that, actually, sometimes it's like so much, I don't know, for me it's true, so much easier to see it in another person as they sit there and mirror that, and you can see, oh my gosh, how can they even believe that for a second?
Yeah.
You know, they're just such a wonderful person.
Yeah, yeah, and then in me, you know, it takes me immediately to that experience of incredible compassion, you know, projecting that compassion on this other person, and love, unconditional love of that person, mm-hmm. and an absolute unwillingness to tolerate self-hate. Mm-hmm. And it's great seeing that out there, and then bringing it back. And then looking at like all those really real, completely unacceptable parts of me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, ooh, yeah, you know. Yeah. It's great to see it out there and then bring it home.
Bring it home. And have that same experience for this person, that complete acceptance.
Yeah, yeah. And then lately I just want to say I've been playing with using the recorder in different ways, mm-hmm. which has been really fun. And there's been a couple of recommendations or kind of encouragements by the guide in the email class that I really love. I love the email class. I love the guide's encouragement. And then I love the fact that I, the practitioner, said, oh, I'm going to try that.
Uh-huh.
Rather than just like, that's a neat idea.
That's a good idea. Next.
I'm actually going to do that right now. And I'm not going to postpone. I'm going to do it right now. And there was someone who said, I think it was the words were, life has my back and will guide me. I can let go. I'm free. And the guy's response was, if that was our only recording and we just listened to that over and over and over, it would change a lot. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to do that. So I recorded it, and it was awesome. It was like 7 seconds long. And there was like a jet in the background and then a little Tweety Bird at the end. And then I found this function on the recorder where I could just loop it.
Uh-huh.
And so without even having to press any button, it just goes on and on and on and on. And it almost has a kind of like hypnotic quality, like in a good way.
Uh-huh.
Like it's getting in there at the cellular level. And there's so much resistance to using the recorder like that. It's like, the voices, I hate it. Like, it's boring. Like, this is not doing anything. This is absurd. And, I mean, it's just so, it's been such a great cue to, like, press forward and just continue with that because no wonder the voices hate it, because that's exactly how they work.
Yes.
It's just the same message over and the same, like, 4 sentences over and 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 over. Until it becomes, you know, incorporated at a cellular level to where it doesn't even have to say words.
Yeah.
It's just this orientation to life that's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And so to, you know, rob it of its process and then use it for good, you know, use those superpowers for good, not evil. it's great. And so I'm loving that and just want to get it out there that I commit to continuing to go up against that resistance using that technique.
Wow, yeah. I love that. And it just reminds me of it's always the simpler things. You know, and conditioning wants to make everything so gosh darn complicated.
Yeah.
You know, and to just make this 7-second recording, you know, and nature provided you with the perfect background, it sounds like music for it, and to just listen to that over and over again and know that it's, you know, heading in the right direction from the level of resistance that you encounter.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And there's so many fun ways to play with it too. Even though it's simple, there's no shortage of possibilities for great ideas. And today I made a recording that was 30 seconds long of just thank you. I repeated the words thank you over and over and then looped that.
Mm-hmm.
And then this morning as I was going about my kind of tasks, I probably heard thank you a couple thousand times.
Wow.
And I really felt it getting in there. And I really started feeling the gratitude.
Yeah.
You know, like the voices say, that's impossible. It can't work like that. It can't work that you just hear a word and your experience changes.
Yeah.
Like, that's ridiculous. Yeah. But you know, why would they have so much resistance if it weren't true?
Yeah. Reminds me of what Sherry was saying on the radio show, I think it was, you know, that a small, as part of that conditioning process, we hear the word no like 100,000 times, and maybe yes, you know, 5,000 times, and so that, you know, that's what becomes and so, you know, just what you describe is redoing that programming.
Yeah.
Thank you. You know? Thank you. Yes, thank you.
Totally.
Yeah.
As you said that, I was just remembering a time, I went through a pretty profound depression in my early college years, and I remember I was riding my bike down the road, and I rode by this building, and the sign said, the Brain Retraining Center. And I saw it, and I was like, yeah, that's what I need. Of course, I got talked out of even going to the door. I was like, ah, it'll be too expensive. It would never work, all that. But it was just kind of like, that's it, And so, such profound gratitude to have found this is, right. In a sense, the Brain Retraining Center.
Right.
The, or the, the heart, opening set. It's just like the ability to kind of alter those neural pathways and those connections through this incredible practice that is so, like a kind version of the word relentless is the word I'm looking for, but just like,
relentlessly loving.
Relentlessly loving, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's it.
And isn't it so cool that life never gives up on us? You saw the Brain Retraining Center. Conditioning wouldn't let you open the door, but boy, it handed you another opportunity in practice.
Yeah. And who knows what that other door was, but I'm so glad it was this one that opened.
Yeah. Asha, did I see your hands? Or were you just... No. Okay. Yes, June.
A couple of weeks ago, my mom said... it's time to get serious about love that stuck with me too. Mm-hmm. I've been talking recently in group about when I get kind of lost in fantasy out of the moment and I follow some train of thought, it always winds up in something painful or embarrassing, some old memory that either did or didn't happen that much better. Mm-hmm. And that is just a really yucky feeling to get lured to that place.
Yeah.
And I didn't sleep well last night. Mm-hmm. And I lie there and I meditate and do practices. And invariably I'll start drifting and I'll wind up in that place. And I just feel awful. And so, very simple tool that we have in this practice is when you get to that place, do the chicken dance. So I did the chicken dance out loud twice, and then and it completely feels like love. It completely changes the experience.
Wow.
It's so fun. It's that sense of humor.
Yes, who says practice has to be, not fun? That conditioning just is so stuck in seriousness and, it must just hate the chicken dance, and to do that and to just have your experience changed. Yeah, I love it. Reminds me, seems like when I first came to practice, everybody was doing the hokey pokey. The hokey pokey was the thing, to just...
Thank you for reminding me. Yeah.
So there's...
Switch my...
Exactly. It's always good to have a backup move,
These days, I might start seeing if there's a kind of rain dance.
Really? Yeah. The duck dance. Someday we may have to have the chicken dance demonstrated. I'm not even so sure.
I think I know what it is, but whatever it is, the one I'm doing, really.
I suspect one just has to say chicken dance, and that's enough. Thank you.
And listening to this, what I'm hearing that I just comes clear to me is that when I'm listening to conditioning, who conditioning is addressing is the conditioned self. So no wonder there's no reassurance in it. There's no comfort in it. There's no help in it because who it is addressing is not the authentic being.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I know that, but it just got clear.
Yeah, it's just helpful to have that. Yeah, to just.
spoken so clearly.
And the mentor, who is authentic, addresses authenticity, and so obviously then there's comfort for the authentic being in that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, I just, there's like a parting of the waters there for a minute, mm-hmm. seeing the difference. And the other night I was talking about, I've had this, dropped in with a disidentification tool of, you know, imagining my life is something that somebody is writing, you know, and so the writer, imagining the handwriting, this is what she does then, and this kind of thing. Uh-huh. And I said, and at the time, and that message is always much more compassionate than conditioning is. And I didn't catch it, but in the course of the group, what I got was, well, of course, because it dropped in from a different place. Uh-huh. It was not conditioning, yeah, reprimanding me or telling me how wrong I was or how I needed to correct myself. Mm-hmm. It's simply a message from the mentor as a reminder, mm-hmm. and it comes from a place of all you need to do is be reminded.
Yes.
And so it felt like a perfect example of that, you know, any number of times I've been told I need to straighten up my act.
Yeah.
Well, that's conditioning, addressing a conditioned self, and that's where the conversation's happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the one who is authentic isn't even being addressed in that.
Mm-hmm.
Just really got that.
Wow. Just really seeing that, what I got from that too is that, you know, when the mentor addresses you, it's addressing your authenticity. And there's absolutely no question about, as you said, there's just no feeling of having to fix oneself, having to change oneself, having to get on a program, mm-hmm. you know, and whereas when the conditioning is addressing a conditioned part of ourselves, it just falls on this conditioned being, or this identity, who's like, oh my God, yeah.
Who gets reinforced.
Reinforced, yeah.
And then when the mentor addresses, since the mentor's not even addressing the conditioned self, the conditioning just gets completely bypassed.
Mm. Completely.
Yeah.
Just, I love that. It's just like an image of just going like a laser right to the heart.
Yeah.
And there's just a instantaneous recognition.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And that's always been my experience of being facilitated. Mm-hmm. You know, so often I'm coming from some conditioned, content-oriented place, mm-hmm. and the response, it's just like, it's why we have that experience of the 2x4 to the head.
Yeah.
It's like, where in the world did that come from?
Yeah.
But we always recognize it
as
hitting where it needs to hit.
Yeah.
And it feels like, with recording and listening in the mentor, what I'm experiencing is that now is happening with facilitation by the mentor.
Uh-huh. I mean,
that channels, that neural pathway gets opened internally.
Wow. So that experience that you've had so often in group, you know, just being facilitated, mm-hmm. and hitting that authentic place, and it's now, it's incredible, really. We now have that experience of being able to have that just with the use of the recorder and, mm-hmm. turning to the mentor. And so now it's like, gosh, we don't have to wait for, you know, retreat, group, all of that. It's just a constant companion.
It's available.
Available to access that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Susan.
So I never liked the word love. Sort of ego just took it and made it mean
it
something.
It did get sort of thrust on in our culture.
Around. Valentine's and validate yourself because you got to love them. You know, here's what love looks like. Don't rock the boat. You know, it was sort of taken and twisted.
Mm-hmm.
And not forever, of course. So, but the two things that have helped me with it is recording and listening and sitting. And so, my experience is so. I really love that thing about. So when I record and listen, I too get to start going. You know, get to hear both. I just get to say what I want to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's such an experience of love because there's nobody there judging.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it.
Yeah.
I'm not really believing it because, as was pointed out earlier, as soon as I punch that thing, I disidentify some. It doesn't really matter at that point.
Yeah.
But then the you know, the patience and the kindness and the sweetness start. The authentic love seems to arise.
Mm-hmm.
When I go looking for it, mm-hmm. it's often ego trying to invalidate my experience.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So what I really should do is be a little more loving.
Yeah.
But what I really want to do is say, get your chore done.
Yeah.
But ego says, saying just directly, you know, you got to get your chore done. well, that's not really loving. You know, go in and do it for them and make it, you know. Just
yeah.
So, although I have been playing with using the word because ego co-opted for so long that I didn't get to use it. So I do say it every single night to myself. And I say it and I have it recording, but I do my, I say it every single night again, you know, four or five times. Well, I just say, I love you. Yeah. I love you. I love, you know, and all the different intonations. And I have a recording of that. The one I've been listening to is This Is It. So I also recorded that one over and over in different, this is it. This is it. So with the things that I was thinking about, you know, when it was suggested we look at our thing, the duality. I have a duality body thing. I mean, it was stretch marks. But finally the doctor said, Susan, nothing you can do about it. Three kids. I said, but I always had, it was the only feature that was, you know, I was never curvaceous, but I had a good stomach, man. It's gone. But one of the things I do about another thing that's happening, I guess this happens as we get older, is I stick my head in the sand. So there's the, it's bad and making excuses for it. And then it's like, I'm just going to pretend it's not happening. You know, as far as an ego, what how ego tries to manage these things and then beat us up for it. Because it could just be... Anyway, as was talked about earlier, I thought I'm gonna practice recording about it because I know something that happens to me is, let's say there's something upsetting. So then I'm conditioned to get in my thing, my yeah, right and wrong, good and bad, mm-hmm. Got to save the world, got to bury your head in the sand. Is kind of my my two things. And I was sitting here today, coming down the road in one of those. It is just astounding sometimes to watch ego create stories. I mean, before I know it, I'm like some superhuman something or some piece of whatever on there. You know, yeah. It's one or the other.
Yeah.
Because they're both as...
Both of them will work.
Both of them will get me out of the moment.
Yeah.
Forget the beauty of the rain and the green and the silence. Don't pay attention to that.
Yeah.
You listen to these, one of these stories.
Yeah.
And so as I was meditating, I thought, just like when I can have the recorder in my hand, no, all I have to do is pay attention to my breathing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, you really got to think about this right now? No, mm-hmm. I'm not going to do this right now is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And then when I'm walking, I'm walking.
Yeah. And the breath and sensations in the body are, just too...
That's all we have to focus on.
Yeah.
When we don't have that, you know, when it's not a recording time.
Yeah.
Recordings are good, you know, get that thing in the ear. But often, it's, I'm at work, okay? This person's saying something, I'm having a somatic reaction. What do I do? Mm-hmm. Conditioned response, fight or flight. All I gotta do is breathe and wait.
Yeah.
Breathe and wait.
Yeah.
Breathe and wait.
And as I said earlier, breathe and be with.
Yeah, you know, and that is love. Then it kind of starts authenticity, kindness, patience, tolerance, all those things, you know, in the Bible.
Yeah.
Love is, I wish I had the good Christian ability to quote that thing, but because it's a good one, but that is what begins to flow forth.
Uh-huh.
When I try to make it happen,
looks pretty. Yeah, so just being with the breath, being with the sensations in the body. You know, not running to put the head in the sand, not running to distraction. You know, it's all that experience of, it's chipping away all the conditioned stuff that's got labeled with love now. You know, it's that authentic experience of love.
I was thinking with my friends, I could start just saying, man, I've got so many sensations going in my body. I'm believing a story, you know, that I don't actually think is true, but I'm, you know.
Yeah.
They might just think I'm crazy, but.
I was re-listening to an open air, and Sherry was talking about, life never speaks to us in full sentences. It's so easy to forget that, you know, that the, all those sentences coming through, they just seem like they have something to say to us, you know?
I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah, she said never. If you're hearing full sentences in your head about something, that is definitely not input from life. So that's the time to come back to the breath, come back to the body, and just drop it.
Well, I'm struck by the humor that's been used, you know, and talked about this morning, and something dropped in around that with the workshop that I'm doing. So I'm in this wonderful place in practice where I'm sort of like being in the midst of a new love relationship with, you know, with these two internal beings here, you know. And I don't know who's who. I don't know who's the heart, who's the mentor, who's the practitioner, who's that. And you know, those titles don't even really seem to matter much. In fact, we kind of lap on the recorder. I don't know, you know, I don't know who I'm talking to or who I am, but, you know, here we are.
You're in the process of love.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't matter.
Exactly. Oh, I love that you said that.
It could be your pet chicken.
Exactly. But it's not. But what it is and what dropped in was around, so the part of the game that we're playing right now, is to stay in process and watching how content pulls me out of that love process, that love relationship, into content, you know, of some sort or another, millions of different ways, that, you know, millions of different pieces of content that does that, just like what's been talked about. And the funny thing that dropped in is people were talking, I don't know if you know this old movie called The Princess Bride. It is the funniest movie. And it's all about this circle, you know, this love relationship between these two. And all of these outlandish things that happen to them, you know, big rats being, you know, attacked and falling in these sinkholes and, you know, all of these really ridiculous content. And it just dropped in that I can practice that, but yet their love is what is the common thread throughout the whole movie.
That's the focus.
The focus. I mean, never wavering from that, you know. And it just hit me that I can look at the content pools with that sort of levity, because they feel so really real sometimes. But to look at it through that lens of, it's just, I'm just going through this life with these outlandish things happening, you know, and but what's really important is that relationship, is that process of love.
And as you're in that process of love, if you stay in that process of love, all those things can't look anything but outlandish.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, to just really see all of that stuff, you know.
Yeah, it's just one more thing coming down. It's just the next little, you know, hut we're meeting on the path, or, you know, whatever it is, you know. Yeah, it really puts it in proper perspective.
Yeah. She's walking along the movie set of life, you know, in this process of love, and then it's like, can you believe what they just sent in from the, you know, over here and over there, and just not getting caught by any of it.
Yeah, not, and we can go through it together, you know.
Yeah,
we can go through.
Well,
and
that's just essential, isn't it? That's just that's there's that place when we're in separation and all that stuff is so frightening and so real and so easy to get sucked into. But finding that place of love and knowing that it's no longer something that we're doing as a separate individual, that we're doing it in communion or connection, and with life, with mentor, whatever you want it to, but just that knowledge that we're no longer alone.
Wow, that's everything. You know, and as you're saying, I'm having this memory of years ago, I was, for whatever reason, just struck with the word with. Mm-hmm. And there for a while, I was just on a jag that's the most beautiful word in the English language, is the word
With. Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, and it's what you're describing. It's what we're describing.
Yeah, what's coming up this morning.
Yeah.
Just being with this person, you know, with everything, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and just remembering that in the course of this conversation, it just has given me this feeling of being so loved all along the way. Mm. You know, it just was a long time ago that I had that. You know, and then here it is, kind of the resurfacing.
And I have to say that, you know, it's that, as a Christian, where the person was saying that I was so long, alone for so long, and Jesus saying, yes, but that's when I was carrying you.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And it just, that's what I saw in what you were saying. It's just like feeling so alone, but it never was so.
Yeah,
never, was,
never
so.
Was so. You know, and it's even, I think it's Isaiah or somewhere that before you were even born, I knew you. Anyway, it's just beautiful, and it's a, you know, and just to tie in one little other thing is that loving kindness that the last email class is pointing to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, let me catch people up in my, that where the master lets the student even step on his head and shows him such great kindness in the face of this sort of misbehavior and whatever, and the student has a change, you know, right then. It's like when we get that kindness, and I think that's just what happened in this moment with me, is that kindness and gentleness and compassion is what really facilitates the change.
It's the whole deal, you know. It's like Sherry's always said, why do we think that being beaten will ever lead to a change in our lives?
Yeah.
It's just so not taking, it's, you know, beatings lead to more beatings.
Yeah.
Love and compassion leads to more love and compassion.
And humor certainly helps.
And humor is
that was a pretty funny solution of letting the student walk, step on his head.
I know. I think humor falls over in the love and compassion.
Absolutely.
You know,
definitely.
Definitely.
It's a huge tool.
It is a huge tool.
Thank you.
Anna?
I heard a guide say recently that, you know, she's just never confused about who we are and what's not us, what's egocentric, karmic, conditioning, self-hate, and she's just chiseling away.
Uh-huh.
And it just struck me how powerful it is when we get on the same side as the chisel.
Uh-huh.
And it just feels
like they're helping with the chisel. Like, you know,
right.
Let me take a few whacks.
It just doesn't stand a chance. And it feels like that's the energy of group this morning. We're all, you know, on that side of unconditional love, and it's just amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, how powerful that is. Yeah. I've been continuing to just approach any unconsciousness that gets encountered as an opportunity to grow unconditional love there. And just bring love to everything. And what's been arising is some massive depression, which is perfect. I've heard the guide say more than once that, you know, let's prove to ourselves that it's not possible to be depressed when we're truly engaging in a recording and listening practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just on a more enthusiastic than ever campaign with that.
Uh-huh.
And it's been just amazing, like the excitement of where can we grow love next, you know?
Just really the excitement of where can we grow love next, and really helping with the chisel process there. Like, okay, I'm ready to see what's authentic and what's ready to be chiseled away, and realizing that the recorder and the recording and listening practice is a chisel in a way that just really helps to release all that's not needed. Brings back to the heart. And there's this person that's just like totally willing to just like, okay, I've got my tool, and I'm really going to investigate this.
Yeah.
In the face of what, you know, has, as I project, probably in the past, has been kind of debilitating or just, overwhelming.
And I just, there's just a, I mean, it feels like there have been so many huge shifts recently, it's hard to know which one to say is the huge shift. It's just, but I was listening to some recordings of calls that I'd had with one other person in a practice context. And I just heard in the voice of the person talking to this other person, there was a ring or a twinge of, I want this other person to save me. It was just a, it was like, you know, when you hear the person talking about a process, and then you listen to that person over a few calls, and you hear like the meta process or the overarching process, which is, I really do want you to save me. Even though that, you know, it's, it was just an orientation that I heard. I could feel like I detected that. And there was just a, you know, and when ego frames it, it's really bad news that no one else can save us. And for conscious compassionate awareness, it's the biggest privilege and adventure and joy that we are the only ones who can save us, that we get to work out our own salvation diligently. And so, it was like an awakening to the fact that there'd been this unconscious orientation, and just really, you know, stepping into that conscious, compassionate awareness that's going to save the human, and that only can save the human.
I'm reminded of that, that we can't transcend what we have not experienced, what we haven't seen. And just really, what a gift to see that suddenly, that, oh, there's, you know, it seemed like there was all these other processes, but the meta process overall was, save me, you know, and you can do it, or, you know, that just looking out there for someone and to get it, like, oh my gosh, you know, that's going on. And it's possible, it's not possible, but it is possible at that, you know, that's the job given to this being. And there's, and no one else can do it for her. And to just like, whoa, yay.
And just seeing that, that just reinforces that unwillingness to indulge any hatred, because anywhere there's unconsciousness that is kept in unconsciousness by hatred means that it's been kept away from unconditional love. And so it's like, I don't want anything to be kept hidden away from being brought into unconditional love. And so,
why would we want to keep anything hidden from unconditional love? We get, it's so backwards, isn't it? What we're conditioned to believe, that, you know, that the love only comes from keeping things hidden and to be looking like we got it together and looking like things are good.
And I saw the connection between wanting someone else to save me and that exact process of keeping things hidden and colluding with ego. Because if there's an orientation of, oh, I want this other person to save me, then part of that orientation is their wanting to save you is conditional upon you being the good, right person, and them actually being willing and wanting to save you, right? And all of that keeps that dynamic in place. Well, I can't show them this because then they're not going to want to save me. I really need them to. So I've got to, you know, be the way that ego tells me I need to be the right person to get saved. And then when we work out our own salvation diligently, there's nothing that that we're not just over the moon excited about to bring into unconditional love. And just, it just, freedom.
It's freedom, exactly. That's what I was saying. You know, to just, it's just stepping, it's like, that's like just another universe that you just step outside of into this possibility of freedom, you know, and it's like what it's been, and going with, that person toward freedom, not having to do it alone, realizing that connection and like, whoa,
right,
the doors fly open.
And of course the beautiful thing is when we're in that orientation of working out our own salvation diligently and becoming the conscious compassionate awareness that can save a human, then we're open to support.
Wow, what a different place being open to that kind of support than being having to hide to be the right person to get the support, you know? It's like, whoa.
So those recordings are, you know, your goodness is already established, so how do you want to be today? And you're worth any amount of effort. Because that's part of the experience of depression, that, oh, you need to eat again. Oh, God, you need to be washed again. Oh, it's like this, oh, despairing, exhausted. Mm-hmm. And I'm just seeing that, you know, everywhere. Like, oh, I need to put some dry socks on you. And it really, it's like, you know, that's part of the experience of depression. So just encountering that, and as I'm hearing over and over again, you're worth any amount of effort, I'm becoming more conscious in those places where there's that, turning that into excitement, to love, to care for,
You're worth any amount of effort. Mm-hmm. And it'll help you be any way you want to be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Working out your own salvation ability is fun. It's a privilege and an adventure and a joy, and thank God we get to do it and all do it together. It's amazing.
It is fun. Thank you. Let's see, Cameron.
Well, I just had an insight in that last conversation, and in that if I have a process that in which I believe that I need to be saved, then I believe I have to stay that person who needs to be saved in order to be saved. And I was just like, whoa, you know? How many other kind of identities is that process in place where what I need to transcend that identity is somehow reinforcing the identity?
What was spoken to earlier. And that identity really doesn't want to get saved, so it just is a...
The identity doesn't want to get saved.
Yeah, doesn't want to change.
And it kind of, the identity defines it that I can't do that. I need somebody else. And the whole process is seeking, and that seems like an active process that I'm doing something for myself, but in the process of doing that I am maintaining being someone who cannot save herself.
Right. Wow. Also seeing as you were saying that the other person you're drawing in to save you, what a closed loop system that goes nowhere, even for the person who thinks they're helping.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the whole thing is conditioning and reinforces conditioning.
Yeah.
And, wow. That's really big. Yeah, and that was really a...
So we get to come back to the breath, the sensations, just being here.
And the whole thing that came out of that is the thrill of whatever the identity is, you know, even all the identities, the thrill is that we get through practice, we get to see that person who's trapped in that, who actually believes she needs to be saved or whatever the other identity might be, and be the one who can actually help that person to get out of that stuck place and become one who does not need to be seeking to be saved, but who can and probably already is saved as soon as she sees that.
We get to be that which the identity has believed it's always been looking for. We get to be that.
Yeah, that's the manifestation of that saying, be the person you want to find.
Right. Right. We get to be that love.
Yeah, and I can't actually see other examples of that, but I just had this sense that all of the identities are exactly, that's the meta process again, that whatever the identity does keeps itself in doing it, keeps itself in that identity.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it seems like it's doing something to get out of it, but in doing something to get out of it is confirming that it is.
Yeah. It's its whole job to keep itself intact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's big.
It's very big. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very similar thing, I think, that I was just seeing this morning. I had been writing actually to my awareness coach about this process that goes on with me, and really laying, you know, I laid it out, and I said, there it was again. This is what happens. This is how I feel. You know, and what I said was, you know, I'm so tired of this. You know, it's killing me. I need to fix this, you know? And the response I got back was, you know, are you really falling for it? You know, you lay it out so clearly. Are you really falling for it? And I've been sitting with that response, because what it was feeling like was, yeah, I am, because when that message comes in, when that content comes in and those sensations arise, what I want to do is anything I can to make it stop, you know, and I'm just, you know, fix it, you know. And what I was seeing in the conversation this morning is when I'm in that place of I hate this and I need to fix this, that's still a part of the process. That's still a part of the identified one who... you know, who needs to do something because something is wrong. And if I were instead the one who says, I love her, how can I help her get out of this? It would be very different. Then I really wouldn't be falling for it, because I wouldn't be that person who's stuck in it.
So just seeing the difference between being identified with that person who's just stuck and has to fix it and just, you know,
and has to fix it within,
kind of fed up with it,
right,
and doesn't know what to do, versus being, I would project, at center, or, you know, to the mentor.
Yeah, being the one who looks at her and says, she's in that suffering place again, what can I do to help her?
What can I do to love you?
Yeah, what can I do to love you when you're in this place?
Yeah.
Rather than who I usually am is, how can I get out of this place? I hate this place. Mm-hmm. I want out of this place. Mm-hmm. But it's not. I may see the whole process, and I may see there it is again. Here I am again.
Mm-hmm.
But I am still the one who's in that process, and I can't get out of it.
Right.
I'm in it. I can't, because I'm it.
Yeah. It's just such a torturous place to be stuck in that.
It is. And the sensations are so strong that when I'm in it, I believe the only way to deal with it is to fix the content that is creating those sensations, which actually I can't, because it's actually never even happening in that moment. Only the story about it.
Some of those whole sentences.
So there's nothing to be done in that moment. So, you know, that's a hopeless cause.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But instead, you know, what could I, as the person observing this, do to love her would be a very different process.
Do you see a way to support that switch?
What we've been talking about, you know, recording, listening, having those things to turn to.
To keep that in your awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's great. And just that, you know, the other thing that arises, just that it is a practice, and that, you know. So we practice that, and then we practice it some more, and we practice it some more, and then every time we realize we're not practicing it, it's like, oh, how can I love you?
Right.
You know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, because it's not you know, conditioning is not going to stop what it's doing that produces that result because it's really successful.
Oh, yeah. it loves that result.
It's got years of proving that this works. Yeah. So it's not like I'm going to wake up tomorrow and it'll never happen again.
Mm-hmm. But it's been seen and it can never be unseen. Right. And mm-hmm. that's the beauty of it. Yeah. Thank you all.